Hi, I'm Becky Sims, and welcome to Behind the Future, the podcast from Aspiration Digital. We're here to unlock digital careers, one conversation at a time. On each episode, I'll be joined by a student co-host. We'll be interviewing amazing people from across the industry to learn about how they got started in their career and what it is that they do. Let's dive in to find out the secrets to their success. Well, that was another fantastic episode, wasn't it, with Diana?
Yeah,
what,
it was amazing.
What was most impactful?
I would say that joining communities is really important because you get to network with people, and going through a journey in your career is also really important because you get to see like what you think it's right for you and what you think is not right for you.
Love that. Yeah, honestly, there were so many little twists and turns in her story. Yeah. When I thought we were done, another twist came in. So, and she's only pretty young still as well. So I can't wait for you to hear this. Enjoy this episode of Behind the Future.
I'm Diana, and I'm taking you behind the future.
Welcome to another episode of Behind the Future. I'm joined by my fantastic co-host, Ashley, today. Ashley, could you introduce yourself?
So my name's Ashley. I'm currently an A-level student studying economics, media and business, and I'm interested in career in marketing.
Amazing. Well, I think you're going to find this conversation really useful. We are joined today by the amazing Diana. Diana, tell us a bit about yourself.
Hello, I'm Diana, and I'm a social media manager for the Folio Society. I've been in the social media world for over 3 years now. I've tapped into different industries. I've also freelanced a little bit, so I've got a little bit of a story to tell today.
Amazing. I cannot wait for us to delve into this. Ashley, what's your first question?
What's the most exciting part of your job, Diana?
Oh, I think the most exciting part of my job is the fact that I came into the book industry without really having a passion for it. Like, I think my manager will hate for me saying that, but I think it's the fact that I'm coming into it new. I'm learning a lot about the book industry. And before getting my job, I actually never read a book out of pleasure. Like, I would always read at university and if I needed to. But now selling these incredible editions, these titles, it's really made me dive into it and want to learn more about it. So yeah, it's learning about new authors, new illustrators, and everyone that contributes into the books that we do. So that's the most exciting part of my job. And I guess the second one, just to be a little bit cheeky, is also the content creation side of it. I love video content creation. And one of the ways, not to spoil it, that I got into the industry is through being a TikTok content creator. And so I live in the world of video.
Oh, that's really cool. We've got some good bits to delve into there. So should we, you've kind of hinted that how you got into it, but should we go back? What was it like when you left school? Did you know, was this your destiny?
No, my destiny was I wanted to be an eye doctor. So as soon as I finished GCSE, I was like, yes, I'm going to do biology because I wanted to be an optometrist, because every time I went to Vision Express, I would like it when they were like, oh, can you see this side or by this side? And that was like literally the thing that I loved them. And I was like, yeah, mom, I want to do that when I grow up. And so when I got my GCSE results, I didn't get the results for biology, and that was a shocker. Immediately they were like, unfortunately you can't do biology. I was like, right, okay, what's plan B? Plan B was business. And so I got, I think, a B in business, and I did that at A level. And then my mum was like, right, so we're going to do it at university then. I was like, okay, well, I kind of need to like think of something quite quickly. But at the same time, I was also applying for a business apprenticeships at EY and PwC, and I got through to the final round at EY. But my mom was like, no, you need to go to university, because obviously they are immigrants here in this country. And so they only thought that university was the way forward. So they were like, no, you need to go to university. So I went to university, I went to Aston, and I studied international business with Spanish. And so I did a year abroad in Barcelona, and I did everything business. And so, yeah, it kind of got me to where I graduated, and I was like, right, what's out there for me? Kind of felt a little bit pressured to get something, of course. Like, we all, like, everyone's asking you, aunties, family, so what are you doing after university, after you graduate? And so I was like, I don't know. But then my friend, she did an internship in HR, and I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to do HR as well. Managed to get a role in there. Hated it. Hated recruitment so much. And so I was like, right, I don't think this is for me. And because of the pressure of my family, they're like, no, you need to stay in your job. You know, there's no such thing as not liking it. Like, you need to pursue your career. I was like, no, I know there's so much more out there for me. And in the meantime, I was doing TikTok videos of my trips. I was traveling a lot at the time. And so I was like, And then I came across a video. I was like, no, you can do social media management. You can handle accounts. I was like, I can do that. I can do that. And so I left my HR internship after 4 months and I got my first internship in social media.
Amazing. There's so much to unpack in there, isn't there?
So much.
I want to know, how's your Spanish?
Muy bien, porque mis padres son de Colombia.
Oh, very nice. Very nice indeed. I always think languages is such a cool thing to have in your back pocket because it opens up so much possibility, doesn't it?
It is.
So are you fluent, are you?
See.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice. Well, we'll stick to English for this today because otherwise I'm not going to do so well. I don't know about you, Ashley.
No, I speak Spanish.
I love it. We could branch into different languages, though, couldn't we? But we won't be your hosts.
No, not today.
You'll be on your own. There was so much in there, wasn't there? So many things to unpick. Have you got a question?
Would you say uni was useful?
I'll be very honest, for what I do now, no, because I think I got my direct experience through being a TikTok content creator. So at the time, I was able to obviously know how to edit videos, take content and post them on TikTok. And I learned how to create videos that were engaging, that were able to gain those views, those traction. So I would say my direct social media experience, no, but I think university does give you so much life skills that you need and a lot of experiences as well. For example, I did touch on going to Barcelona and I think that gave me a lot of independence and, you know, meeting new people. I believe that right now, I think when you're young, we all live in the same bubble. We have the same interests. We do the same things. We talk about the same things. And so when I went to Barcelona at the age of 19, 20, I was shocked. I was like, oh my God, there's so many different people here. And I learned so much about life. And I think that's what university does. Fair enough, I don't do necessarily what I did in my degree, but I think it does give you so many life skills. And I met my friends for life and my current partner there too.
Amazing. Oh. Amazing. And you mentioned about going for the apprenticeship with EY, which amazing that you got down. So did you get to the point of being offered the role or to that last kind of...
So I got to the final stage and that was because I did the summer internship back in year 12. So I saw the role, well, like the cohort thing that they did at the time. And so I thought, oh, let me go into it. And I got the job. I think I don't know how I got it, but I just got a call. And next, you know, they're like, yeah, we're going to offer you 6 weeks at EY in the summer. And it was amazing. I learned so much and we got paid as well. I think it was like £500 per week, like per month. I was like, yeah, I'll take it anyways. It's still something for the summer. And so because of that, I left a good impression and they're like, oh, why don't you apply for our apprenticeship? I was like, yeah, why not? Because they're like, yeah, we would pay for your degree, you would come to work and you would have that sort of balance there as well. And I was like, yeah, let's do that. So I think I got to like the second to last stage. I was very, very close. And then I think I didn't really tell my parents what I was doing until I was like, yeah, I'm going to an interview. They're like, No. What do you mean, what interview? Like, what interview are you doing? And so I sat down and obviously tried to explain to them. But, you know, I guess certain things happen in life for a reason, you know?
Yeah, definitely. But what an incredible experience. And that would have really set you up for being able to have those kind of interview situations.
Absolutely.
Because I think sometimes you get thrown into it at the point that you really want something and you're like, I've not really practiced this before. I don't know what it's like. But actually to have gone through that, it's great to have put yourself forward and to have got that far into the process. And also doing that summer internship. So that was when you were in year 12, was it?
Yeah, 12. Honestly, I think just one day I was like, I saw it. I was like, yeah, why not? And I think in our careers department as well in school, they're like, oh yeah, they've, you know, a lot of business companies do summer internships, go ahead and do. I was like, yeah, why not? I didn't know if I wanted it that bad, but it just happened. I got accepted into it.
It's incredible though, isn't it? Because I do think the experience side really helps them when you are looking for roles and helps you to start to filter out what you like and you don't like because you've been in that office environment. You've seen what it's like to have co-workers and to start to build relationships and to go to meetings and all these things that until you do it, you don't really know what that's like.
Exactly.
So,
and we also got the famous ThinkPad laptop as well, which is so common in business. I was like, oh my God, this is so good.
I've made it.
And the fact that we could take it at home as well. I was showing my family at the time. I was like, yeah, look, this is what we get if you work in like in corporate and stuff. And yeah, it was really, really nice to experience that.
Love that. And that would have also given you a lot to put on your CV. Like even now, that's probably still a really cool thing to be able to call out on your CV.
Honest with you, I don't think I add it still now. I don't have it in there. I think not because I don't want to, but I think okay, we not want to like digress the conversation a little bit, but because obviously I think now when you do CVs, you have to be very selective with what you put in there, and you obviously want to show your direct experience that matters to the role that you're applying for. So that's my little tip there.
That's true. Yeah, no, I get that. I just, what I think I would see in seeing that on your CV is, wow, this lady pushes herself, because actually in year 12 to feel confident enough to go, do you know, I'm going to go and do an internship. That gives a real window into who you are, as to, okay, so she's had this for a while, this bug to go and do well and to push herself, which I really love.
Yeah.
Really love.
Yeah, that is really impressive.
Oh, thank you.
What was it like in Barcelona?
So I remember when I was planning, so because of my degree, I had to do a year abroad because it was with Spanish. So you had to go to a Spanish speaking country to do your placement year. And I had the option to do Barcelona, well, Spain in general, or go to Latin America, to actually my home country, Colombia. But I thought, okay, no, that's a little bit too far. Let me stay within Europe so that if I need to go home, I can take a quick 2-hour flight. And so we had to find our own, like, work experience, so we had to apply for roles. It was quite challenging, I would say. I think when you were trying to do uni work and also applying, and you know, you had that sort of pressure as well with deadlines, or you have to make sure you've got an apprenticeship or a work experience by this day. So it was quite difficult until I came across Travelpack, who is a tech company now, so they do like softwares for travel for B2B. And so they offered me a customer service internship within the customer like support team. And at the time, I think Travelpack was on, I think, 300 employees. It's now, I think, 2000, like it's massively grown. And so, yeah, so when I got the role, I was like, yeah, okay, cool. It's time to go. There was a lot of paperwork. Obviously, I had to get a lot of visas, but because I got a work experience, then they handled all of that stuff, which was great. And then, yeah, it was time to plan. So I had to find somewhere to live. And I was being a little bit picky, which I should have never done that. And I was like, right, I don't want to share a bathroom with anyone. I don't want to, like, I just want to have my own space. So I went straight in and I got myself an apartment, one bedroom apartment in the heart of Barcelona. And I was like, great, okay. So I got there, I think it was the 26th of June, 2021, I think it was. So 21, yeah, I think it was. And so my mum, my sister and my grandma came with me. They dropped me, they looked at the apartment. They were like, yeah, it's lovely. And yeah, so they were with me for about 4 days. And then after that, I was like, right, I'm homesick now. And I had a very, very bad couple first few weeks. And I think the mistake that I did there was that, and I was being very picky, but I should have gone into a room share with other like students, with other people that are working, just so that I wouldn't feel too lonely. Just because when I would go to work, yeah, I would have people to talk to, but then I would come back, I'd be on my own. And I think battling with homesick and being so young as well and having no one there was very, very challenging, I would say. And that kind of caused me to go back home quite a lot. So I would get a flight every like 3 weeks back home. And I think when I look back, I wish I could have, you know, made a little bit more out of the experience and gone into room share, which I did eventually, because a one bedroom flat was like nearly €1,000, which is like £900 here, and I was paying it out of my student money. So after a while I did go into a room share, and it made my experience a whole lot better. And I think Barcelona was amazing because, like I said, I was able to meet so many different people and I was able to grow as well. I think there's so many things that I've learned now that, fair enough, I didn't take advantage of it then, but have left a very big imprint on who I am today.
Love that. I love Barcelona as well. I got married just north of Barcelona. Really? So like for a few years when we were planning it, I was in and out of Barcelona. Not as much as you, by the sun, but regularly. I love the vibe. I love the city vibe and the beach vibe that you get there. It's
I literally
both.
Just came back 2 weeks ago because I literally go religiously once a year. I don't know why. I think that's the imprint that I left in me. Like, I always go once a year. I think it just has a special place in my heart. And who knows, maybe I could move there. I don't know. Like, life is unpredictable.
And having a role in customer service, that's a really good grounding for a role, isn't it? To learn about what that means and what was that like?
Oh my gosh. It was, I think, so, so challenging. It was because obviously we were dealing with travel, we were dealing with businesses, you know, we're being with executives, with managers, directors, and handling their travel. It was very, very hard sometimes. And because I've never done like customer service, obviously I used to have like my retail jobs like in like year 13 and like your retail job and stuff. But coming into like a corporate setting and dealing with softwares and tickets and, you know, battling solutions on how to do them. And it was very challenging. I remember, I'll be honest, I hated my job. I didn't like it. I hated customer service just because they would come and complain to you. Obviously, they would treat you a little bit like badly. And you would sort of like, it's very hard to not take it personally. Yeah. And so especially at 19, I was like, why are they treating me like that? Or I don't want to do this. Or yeah. So, but I think it taught me so much about what it is to talk to other people, communication skills, which is very important for any job nowadays. And so, yeah, I'm very, very grateful for it, although I hated it. And also one thing was that as an intern, I would get like 500 euros with my, like, let's say my colleague will be getting like 2,500. So whenever I would like, I'll think, oh, I'm not going to do this because they're getting like four times what I earn. So why the hell am I stressing?
Yeah. It's tricky, isn't it? But it is definitely trying to handle unhappy customers or challenging situations. There is no better way than dealing, like learning how to deal with it than being in it. Because you can't, like we could sit here now and go, should we role play what it's like? Let's imagine that Ashley's an angry customer. But nothing's like the real situation, is it? And I think knowing how to, and it's funny, isn't it, because we've probably all been on the other side of it where you're really annoyed about something and you say to the person, I know this isn't your fault, but I'm really annoyed.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you have to empathize, and I imagine that was just brilliant from a skills perspective, even though you didn't enjoy it and know that it's not for you.
Absolutely. And I think it kind of ties into a little bit of social now, because obviously I do a lot of the community engagement. So I'm front facing all of our audiences online, and we get to see those comments, and sometimes they're not the very best. And so, you know, learning how to handle them back then has massively helped me how to handle that sort of commentary nowadays.
I love that. And so the TikTok creator bits that you were doing, was that just off your own back? Were you getting sponsored for some of that over time? How did that all come about?
So I remember when I first started, like once I graduated and stuff, and I used to see a lot of people get invites for free to like restaurants and stuff. And I was like, I want to do that. I want to get invited to restaurants for free. Like, right, what does it take? And I saw that a lot of people would just like upload reviews on TikTok, videos and stuff. And I was like, right, we're going to start doing this. And yeah, one day, I think it was my first video coming back from Rome with my friend. And I was like, right, I'm going to vlog it and I'm going to post it. I'm going to post where to eat, what to do. And I remember I posted it and I think it got like out the back, I think about 20,000 views. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, this is great. A lot of commentary, like, how do you do this? How do you do that? And I continued little bit by bit until I got to a video where I went to Manchester for 24 hours and it went viral within 3 days to like 2 million.
Wow.
And 2 million views. And I was like, okay, well, I didn't have lots of like good comments because we went to quite expensive places and stuff like that. But even then, I was like, wow, okay, this is what TikTok can do for you. And so same aligning with that was when I was in my HR role and I was like, I didn't like it. And then I came across again someone else saying, oh, you can do social media as a career. I was like, what, are you sure? Like, I was like, yeah, you can. So then I started to find internships, which was true. And then I landed, so using that TikTok account as my experience to say, hey, I can make videos, I can grow accounts, like we can work together, sort of thing. So I added that to my CV. And then I got my first internship as a marketing and social media intern for a beauty clinic franchise here in London. And yeah, the rest is history.
I love it. Yeah.
For all the latest marketing and brand news, follow The Drum Mag on Instagram.
How did you struggle to sell the idea into your family? Because it sounds like they've been quite instrumental in other decisions. Were they like, oh, I'm not sure about this?
Do you know what? I think within time and years, I think they kind of get accustomed to what's going on and what it is, right? And obviously it did take a lot of explaining, but funny enough, no, they didn't take any resistance for it. I think it's because I think ourselves, whether you're adult, young, Gen Z or millennial, whatever it is, we are stuck to our phones regardless. Obviously for us, it could be, I don't know, Instagram, TikTok. For them, it's Facebook. Well, you know, it's Facebook or Instagram as well. So they knew the power that social media now has. So that's a good question. Yeah. They never really challenged me. I just went for it. And I think they trusted me now that, listen, I've graduated now. And I think that's what I think they wanted the most, because they didn't get to go university. So I think as long as I got to do it, it was like they were happy. And I think whatever I do now is kind of up to me now.
I love that. I love that. Because through some of the events that we do at Aspiration Digital, we hold parents' evenings as well to try and just make sure that parents see that the digital industry as a whole is like an amazing place to be. And there is so much potential to grow your career. Absolutely. But I think, yeah, we sometimes see barriers where some parents just don't have that experience and they're not seeing it. So therefore they can't help encourage their children because they're like, I'm not sure this is right for you. But actually it's such a booming industry.
It's so big. I think it's not going to stop. And I think, I think that's why I didn't really question it, because it's right in front of our eyes everywhere that we do. And even ourselves, even my mom, even if she says, oh no, social media that. Yesterday she was scrolling in bed for like an hour sending me like Instagram reels. I was thinking, are you sure like you're not getting like involved with it too? So yeah, I think it's booming and I don't think it's ever going to stop.
I love that. I love it. So you get the first internship. What happens from there?
So I was there for 3 months. It was a paid experience for 3 days a week, which was good. And I think initially it was the best experience. I dabbed into Canva. So I started to use Canva to do graphics. And then I also did a little bit of website blog, so copywriting. That's when I realized I don't like doing long form like content, like writing blogs. I didn't like it at all. And then I also dabbed into TikTok for them, but because it was remotely and they would send me like all the raw footage, it was a little bit difficult to make certain like TikTok videos. So I dabbed into it a little bit towards the end, but I didn't get to explore it. And of course I was on Instagram as well. I was posting and I was posting Instagram stories and stuff. So very, very like basic level, until I was like, well, this is great, but I can't really live off this really on 3 days paid. Like, it's not really enough. Like, we live in London now. And so I was like, right, okay, I think it's time to find my next role. So I went to Echelon, who are the direct competitors of Peloton in the US. So they were opening their UK division here. We were a very, very small team of 10. And it was a very quick process. I was on a Facebook group for marketing jobs or the marketing community. And I saw the marketing director post, oh, we're currently looking for a social media and PR executive. I was like, well, let me send her my CV. And yeah, like within a day, she sent me an email back. She was like, right, would love to invite you for an interview remotely. Perfect. And then I met the director as a whole of the team. And she was like, yeah, I loved her. Next, you know, in a week's time, I got the role.
Wow.
And yeah, so I started and it was amazing. It was an amazing team, which is sometimes a little bit difficult to find, but no, they were incredible. And the only thing that kind of like was a little bit, I guess a bit of a shame, was because I was overseeing third party. So what that means, I was overseeing agency. So we would have a social media agency that would do all of our social media, would have a PR that would do all of our PR. And I think at the stage of the career where I was, I needed to sort of be able to do the things that they were doing, not necessarily manage them, but do them myself. Just because if I was to move forward to another role, I wouldn't have had any experience to say, oh, I grew the Instagram account of Echelon from X to X. I didn't have that because the agency was doing that. And I think I gained a lot of managerial experience. So managing a team of like 6 or another team of 8 at the age of like 20, it was crazy because I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And my manager, she'd be like, okay, so what has the agency said? I was like, I don't know. Like, this is so weird. Like, I had to sort of like learn on the spot and sort of learn how to direct people. And I was thinking, what is a 20-year-old doing directing a team? Like, that is insane. And so I loved it so much, but I knew that for my career and where I was, it just wasn't beneficial for me. And I think it would have helped someone maybe where I am now, nearly 4 years into the industry. I could take a job like that just because I've done, let's say, all the groundwork. I've got so much experience to share. But at the stage where I was, I couldn't stay there. And, you know, when I gave in my notice, you know, my manager was gutted, but she knew where I was coming from. It wasn't from a place of like, oh, I don't like my job. I loved it so much. And it was such a struggle to leave. And so after that, I went to hospitality. So I went to Aqua Restaurant Group, so the owners of The Shard, so where The Shard is, Hutong, Aqua Kyoto and Aqua Nueva here. So I went there as their first social media coordinator. So again, no one had ever touched like the socials. It was like the managers whenever they would have time. And I came in and they were like, right, we need you to do the strategy, we need to go to the videos, we need you to go manage the influencers, we need you to do this, you should do that. I was like, okay, cool. Like, first job, like hands-on, this is what I need. And there I learned to do a lot of influencer marketing. I was working with a lot of Love Island influencers that would go. As soon as obviously they would as soon as they were like finish a series or whatever, would have a lot of them influencers up in there for like summer terraces and guest invites and parties. And yeah, it was really, really cool. And having to like speak to their agents and like being able to like create the guest list of like celebrities and stuff like that was really, really cool as well. And then also coming in and taking the video content, going to a restaurant, I was like, yeah, this is what I'm talking about. This is what I want to do. So I would go do the content and I'll get the free food afterwards as well.
Nice.
And then, yes, I was managing like the content calendar, getting it approved. And yeah, just the groundwork which you need. And so from what I think I remember, I think combined with my time that I was there, I think for all four restaurants, we increased a total of 14,000 followers, like just on Instagram. And I also started a TikTok account, didn't get to explore it again. I think at the time, TikTok still wasn't a priority for brands, but I still wanted to like sort of like push that. I was like, no, we need to be on there. And yeah. And then for personal reasons, unfortunately, I had to leave. I had to come out of full-time employment. And that's when the whole world of freelance happened.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I don't know if I should stop there.
Yeah, let's pause for a second. That was, I mean, what an exciting roller coaster to have been on. But also a lot of self-reflection going on throughout that journey of spotting what's right, what's not right. Because things you don't know until you try, do you? So like realizing I don't like writing log form content.
Yeah.
You don't know that before you try to do it. Yeah. It's, you kind of need to be in it, don't you?
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that with Echelon that I've heard about the job through a community. Is that something, do you think, is that a good tip for young people to look at? Because obviously on job boards, there's jobs being posted all the time, but there's also lots of people applying for those jobs. But actually, I wonder if you almost got like a little backdoor in there, because maybe, I mean, I'm guessing they probably posted it elsewhere as well, but you've got an opportunity to approach the person directly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think at the time, I think the thing is that there's so many Facebook communities now. I think there's a big shift, not to digress a little bit onto that, but a lot of people now want to feel part of something. So there's a rise of communities out there. There's so many social media marketing communities, and there's so many people out there, you know, connecting others with others. And even if they're not posting direct jobs, they'll be like, oh, you know, I'm looking for this job. If anyone knows, be like, ah, yes, I do know someone. Let me put you in contact. And I think that's the beautiful thing about communities. And that's how I got my role at Echelon. And a little bit about where I am now with Folio, I messaged our marketing director personally through LinkedIn. I didn't see on a job board. I saw it from her post and I was like, yeah, I kind of got in. I kind of like swooned my way through like thousands of opportunities, like thousands of candidates that were applying for the role. And I managed to get that one-to-one conversation with her. So sometimes it's sort of like meeting where they are. Of course, you have to go for the job board. We all do and stuff. But I think if you can have that direct, you know, connection with them, it will set you aside a little bit.
We've talked about networking on a lot of these episodes and how important it is. Yeah. But actually, you're the first person that's mentioned kind of Facebook communities. So is that, because obviously your age group aren't traditionally, Facebook isn't the go-to place, but there are a lot of marketing communities on Facebook. So actually, it's almost like, keep your Facebook profile alive, not just for mum and dad, because they're on there.
No, absolutely. I think, like I said, because there's a really big shift right now happening on social and in marketing, you know, us as consumers, we want to be part of something a little bit more close. We want to be, you know, we want to have that sense of belonging. So communities is on the rise, whether that be through Facebook, whether that be through Instagram. As you can see, a lot of brands are now building like their own little communities. So even companies as well, or even just as us as professionals, you know, there's going to be a group for everyone, not just in marketing. There's groups for tech, for those in tech, or just, you know, women in business or women in tech. Like there's so many communities right now, and joining them once you sort of like, yeah, I want to be part of that, can really set you aside, because you know, community, a sense of belonging. So we're all going to help each other. I'm currently not part of, I'll be honest, I'm not part of a community right now actively. I am part of a few, like, let's say, like, I don't know, like Hey Orca, who's a social media management tool, and they've got a community for like social media managers. I'm on there here and there, but I think I should be in more.
Yeah. Well, you're also very active on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
That's how we found each other.
That's how we found each other, yes.
So, yeah, LinkedIn is always a good place. Yeah. That's a good, it's obviously a very wide community, but there are small little groups that pop up on there as well. So you're on LinkedIn now, Ashley?
Yeah.
Yes.
I've just need to like get it all sorted and like, because it's a bit confusing. I don't really understand how to use it.
I can't imagine. No, and the thing is that I don't blame you. I didn't take LinkedIn seriously until probably about 2 years ago. Like it's not somewhere where you think, ah, yes, LinkedIn. And I was told at school, yeah, you need to do your LinkedIn profile for your businesses. I was like, yeah, whatever. I was young. I didn't really care. I didn't care about my career at the time as much as I should have. But I think the best advice is, yeah, start from now. Get a grip of what the platform is, because it's changing in front of our eyes right now.
Yeah. And just finding those connections.
Yeah.
And just remembering, and we've talked about this before, but it's another great example of the fact that you could just reach out to somebody and that's helped you skip the queue a little bit there to get into that interview opportunity. And it's worth doing, but it's trying to find out, how do you stand out and how do you, and was that just a standard message you sent, or did you try video or anything like that?
I think at the time, I think it was just mainly an email. I was saying, hi, I saw your post on the Facebook community group. Here's my CV. I've got X amount of like experience, and yeah, I just sent it. I think it's a little bit more genuine when you know, like, oh yeah, you know that it's not massively sending it to other people. So just make that very personalized, or like, hi, I saw you here. Would love to see if we can have a chat. Here's my CV, and see where the conversation goes. I think a lot of people really try a bit too much in their emails. Sometimes just add a little bit of a personal touch, you know? That's what, you being you, is going to help you stand out anywhere.
Yeah. Well, people want to hire, especially when we're thinking about social roles. You want someone that's got a bit of personality, that understands how this all works. So actually being willing to put yourself out there on social media is really important as well. Yeah,
exactly.
So then you find the world of freelancing.
Hello, yes.
Tell us a bit about that.
So this one's a little bit interesting. And I think, again, I was sort of influenced by TikTok. So at the time, again, I would see a lot of videos of people working in the social media world and freelancing. And they were like, yeah, no, you can get so much money. You can, you know, connect with so many people. You can be your own boss, work around the world, or have your own hours. I was like, ah, this is beautiful. Like, I want to do that. And so I was like, yeah, cool. Let's do it. I can't do full-time employment right now due to personal reasons, but I can do freelance. And so, yeah, I started off, and that's when I decided to take LinkedIn seriously, because I heard that LinkedIn is the place for you to find clients. So I dabbed into a lot of LinkedIn, and I was posting, trying to get clients. And I was like, oh, okay. It's a little bit harder than I expected. 1 month gone by, no clients. 1 month and a half, no clients. 2 months, I finally get something. And it was for a small business founder. She was starting an Egyptian skincare brand, and we worked together. It was very, very small. Like, I would say like about £500 a month for the social media management. I was like, you know what? I'll take it. I need the money. I need the experience. Let's go. And then so on and so forth. I started to get little bits of business here and there, but very inconsistent. And one of the things that I saw that I struggled with was finding like my own structure, because I had no boss, I had no working hours. I'd be waking up around 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon and starting my day then. And that was the biggest mistake that I did. I realized that I couldn't like structure my day. I struggled so much, and that had a really big impact on that. Not to mention obviously the financial side of things. It was money coming here and there. And I was like, right, okay, this is a lot more challenging than I thought. And then once I got like a little bit more business in like month 4, starting to get a little bit more busy, I was like, yeah, this is great. I worked at Hijinger as well, just around the corner, and I did their Easter holiday, I think it was. They had like a £1,000 prize, and I went in there for 4 days to freelance and take content for them. That was amazing. That was my big job at the time. I was like, oh yeah, this is great. Maybe freelance is good after all. And then it kind of went back down. I was like, okay, cool. These are the roller coasters of freelance. And then I connected with an agency owner on LinkedIn, and then I got an influencer marketing like campaign. So we had to source on TikTok, I think it was like 200 VR or gaming creators on there to gift them a new VR game of Peaky Blinders. And I was like, yeah, okay, cool, great. Not done it before, but you know, you kind of have to sometimes like wave your eye in, be like, yeah, no, it's fine. I know how to do it. Lies, I didn't know how to do it. But but I learned on the job. And that's something as well. Sometimes you kind of need to like, you know, fake it till you make it a little bit. And so regardless, I delivered. And that was an incredible, incredible project to work on. And then again, work got kind of silent. I was like, okay, right. Like realistically, 12 months of this, I couldn't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. I was like, there's a side of freelancing that unfortunately people don't talk about. Not only is it a struggle to find clients, but you also need to find yourself and how you work as a business owner. And I think, you know, I felt like I still needed to learn a lot more working as a 9-to-5. I felt like, okay, I think I need to go back and learn a little bit more, learn what it is to work in a marketing team. You know, social media isn't the only marketing in there. There's SEO, there's email, there's website, there's so much more. And I didn't know the fundamentals of marketing. So I thought it's time to go back. And it doesn't mean that freelance didn't work, won't work for me ever again. It just didn't work for me then. Mm. And I think it's time to go back. So then I took that decision last year in January. I said, right, time to start applying. And I realized what the work, like what the job hunting world was. And it was very, very difficult. And then at the time, I was just, you know, CVs, crickets, nothing. And I was like, okay, what's going on in the market right now? And then I, again, TikTok, I saw someone saying, oh, we need a portfolio now. You know, when you work in marketing, it's great to have a portfolio to attach to your CV so that you're able to like showcase your work that you've done. And I was like, okay. So I did it. I did a portfolio, linked everything, results, campaigns, all of that stuff. And then within 4 weeks, I landed the role at Folio.
Nice.
Yeah.
Again, so much reflection in there. I really love like, yeah, you've, as much as you've taken some routes that maybe weren't that what you thought they were going to be, you've been able to reflect and realize and then be intentional about what you need next.
Yeah.
Because freelancing is really hard.
Very hard.
It's weird. And I think it is, it's sold as being this the answer to everything. You can be your own boss and you do the work you want to do and it sounds all wonderful. But yeah, when you're sitting there at home going, how do I get the work?
Yeah.
And it is tough. It's really hard. And it is inconsistent unless you can build up retainers that are regular. But then, I mean, I know that from running an agency. That's also hard to get people to commit because they go, oh, yeah, I got this thing. Do it for that. Oh, no, I don't want it all the time. And yeah,
it's very hard. And I think that's what people don't talk about. And I think just it's also the networking. I think, you know, a lot of people tarnish 9-to-5s and I think that's why freelancing has had like its sort of like, you know, growth and stuff like that, which is good. It works for some people. It won't work for others and that's absolutely fine. But I think the beauty of a 9-to-5 or where I am now is that I'm learning so much from so many different people so that when, you know, maybe in 5 years time, 10 years down, you know, down the line, I want to freelance, I've got so much experience, but also a huge networking that will help me get those clients, which back then I didn't have.
Definitely. And interesting, you reflected on the kind of the way your it was hard to manage your days and kind of sleeping in. And yeah, I think to some people that sounds attractive, doesn't it? Because it's like, oh, yeah, I can do what I want when I want. But it isn't great, is it? Because then it's really hard to motivate yourself. Whereas actually, if you know I need to be at work at 9 a.m., I get up and I go to work.
Yeah. And I think that's what was missing. No one was there telling me, not saying that I'm not responsible. We're all responsible. Mm-hmm. But I think when you have that like, oh, yeah, I can do my own days. Oh, yeah, I can wake up whatever time. I've got that sort of, you know, freedom to do so. You have to be very disciplined to be able to get yourself up and start your day. Because if not, you'll be like me. It'll be 2 o'clock, only starting my day. And then next, you know, I just felt like I was constantly working. Like I didn't have like a good balance because I would start my day at like 3. My family would come home around 7 o'clock. You know, it's time to like sit down with them with dinner and stuff like that, and talk to them. But I was like, no, I've got work to do. So I felt like I was distancing myself from my loved ones as well.
Mm, yeah, really interesting. Aspiration Digital is the one-day careers conference to help young people get started in the digital industry. We are just planning our next events and we are planning to move around the UK. So this is your opportunity. If you follow the link in the show notes, you can suggest that we come to your local area and get your school listed on the wait list. Follow the link now and pop your details in. We hope to see you at a future event. So then the new job, which isn't so new anymore.
No,
you're a year or so in. But tell us more about that.
So I came in March last year and the marketing director had literally just restructured the whole team. So I was the new social media manager and they were like, right, you used to come in, do the whole strategy, make the socials your own. I was like, ah, great. Okay, this is where I need to be at now. And so, yeah, myself and my manager, we came in and we literally switched everything around for Folio, like Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, everything that you can think of. And yeah, we came in and we literally started to think, you know, let's test out what works, especially me. I've never been in the book industry before. Didn't know much about books either. And so we're literally just testing everything out. And then my biggest achievement to date was taking them from, I started taking the grips of the account we were at 208k on Instagram to 250k in like 8 months.
Nice.
And really, and we were like, wow, okay, we've kind of got the grips to it. And then now we're very close to it in 300k. I think we're like 20k away from that.
Wow.
And I think it was just literally like trusting ourselves and trusting myself as well, and really showcasing as well the beauty of folio books. I think what we were doing before didn't showcase why we are the independent publishers that we are and why, you know, we've got these beautiful books and charge these premium prices. And so I shifted on Instagram, I shifted our strategy to more video. So because on video you can showcase the illustrations, the artwork, the beauty, whereas in photos you might not be able to do that. And so videos has worked so much for us that we're now, you know, a single video could have got us 200 new followers easy, could have got us 300 new followers. And I think it was that, like, we weren't reaching our audience that we needed to. And so from using Instagram Reels, we've managed to grow so quickly, as well as through partnerships as well with influencers. You know, we've worked with very niche ones, not big ones, niche ones, because we want to make sure that we are hitting like our audience that we want to reach. And so yeah, we've collaborated with them, we've done giveaways with them, and sometimes they resulted in like 5,000 new followers. And bear in mind, these are influencers that are like 50k or less, like they're not really big ones, but more importantly they are Folio fans as well. And that's what we really wanted to work with. We didn't want to work with someone we're like, oh yeah, they've got a million followers, they're very known, but like, yeah, but are they Folio fans? Do they care about what we do? And that was very, very important, something that I've learned from my manager about the influencing world. And yeah, it's been a wild win. And then I've taken care of like the TikTok, and yeah, we've grown that bar about, I think, nearly 12k now ever since I joined. And yeah, keep growing every day.
Love it. Love it. Interesting as well, the kind of more niche micro influencers, how powerful they are. I think everyone gets excited by big numbers and people that people know, but sometimes that's not the right strategy for a business. No. Like, who is your ideal audience? Who are you appealing to?
Oh, so I think it's a little bit different at the moment, I think, because it depends on our title. So our titles sort of have their own audiences. So for example, I'll just go more on the, I would say, the younger side of things. So we've recently just released two books, last year, the Songs of Achilles and The Night Circus, which are very big book talk titles. And so we knew that sort of hanged on to like the younger audience, but also the TikTok audience. So if you go on our TikTok, a lot of our content is on those titles as opposed to other ones, because, you know, that's for that audience. On Instagram, we're a little bit more wild win and we'll post all of our titles. But I guess to answer your question, I think most of our audience is between like female, between 25 to 35. That's our biggest audience right now. Of course, depending on the content and the title, we can hit different audiences. Yeah. But I think our main primary one is 25 to 35 female here in the UK, but also in the US. We have a very big market in the US right now too.
Love that. And I love that you found a new passion by working. Because I think, again, sometimes people think, oh, I've got to go and work somewhere that I love already. Like the Shard sounded really cool. Yeah. And everyone that knows of London will know what the Shard is. Yeah. And you can imagine all the cool people that are there. Yeah. But actually, sometimes those things don't always fulfill our dreams in the same way that we expect, when actually, oh, I don't know if I know much about publishing or books. But suddenly you find a passion or an interest, even if it's not your thing to go and do every day outside of work, you found a reason to love it and to connect with the audience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one thing that I was kind of honest in my interview as well. I was like, yeah, well, I don't really read fiction or anything like that, but I have a lot of passion to learn, and you know, I've got the experience to grow accounts, so it kind of tied in together. And they're like, yeah, they sort of gave me a chance to do that. And I think, you know, even if you don't have the direct experience doing something, as long as you have that passion and you show within your interviews that you're willing to learn, it kind of goes very, very far compared to someone that probably does have the experience. And yeah, everyone's always looking for people to learn, because we all need to learn.
Yeah. It's more about mindset. You want to find people that have got the right passion to do the work.
Exactly.
You can teach them the skills or the subject area.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of took me like about 3 months to get my head around how it all worked.
And it'll keep changing, because I guess you'll bring on different people that you're publishing, different books that all open up to different audiences. Yeah. And then that's kind of part of the fun of it.
It is.
You want every day to feel a bit different.
Absolutely. We're already talking about the books that are coming out in Christmas. Like, we're very fast paced. Like, I know we're only just into a summer collection, direction. But yeah, we're already thinking about 2026. Like, it's crazy in here. So, yeah.
Talking about Christmas in April.
Talking about Christmas in April. Literally, I was like, well, this is what marketing is all about.
It is. Yeah. You're always thinking about when Christmas is going to be.
Yeah.
What's it like working in social media, knowing there's always like a constant change in tastes and like demographics?
I think, I would say that one thing within social that keeps me sane is that, yes, we have a lot of changing. There's so many updates. There's so many like algorithm changes 24/7. Like, we as marketing professionals, like, I'm subscribed to a lot of newsletters where we get daily updates of what's going on in the industry, because it's very important to stay up to date. But also, I used to feel very nervous and I used to feel very anxious of like all the time. I had to be like, oh no, this is coming out, I need to test it. Sometimes you need to slow down, because one thing that I realized, if you want to be in this career for a long time, you can't stress. You need to be very sane. And so, yeah, for example, there's so many changes on Instagram coming ahead. And what I've done is that, yeah, I've taken note of them and I've seen what others are doing, you know, take a step back, see what others are doing and seeing, ah, okay, this is how we're going to implement it at Folio. I know a lot of people would fear, oh, but I don't want to miss out, I don't want to do this. But sometimes you being so quick can get you into the wrong decisions and making you do like the wrong content and stuff like that. But that's why we have a strategy where, you know, you kind of do your fundamentals. Yeah, strategies change here and there, but I think it's very important to observe first and then take action, because if not, you're going to drive yourself insane. And that's what happened to me. So that is my number one thing when working in social, because I realized I can't stay like this. And if I want to develop a career and stay here, I need to learn something. I need to learn to stay sane, to be able to manage all of these changes that happen every single day.
Is the data performance side of it quite important to your role, like understanding that? But also, does it end up taking a bit of a personal toll if you're like, I thought this was going to do better and it didn't do as well as I expected it to? Because yeah, we're constantly being shown those numbers, aren't we?
Yeah, I think on the data side of things, when I came into this role, I knew how important it is in marketing. Everything, you know, what you do, you need to have your results to back it up, not only just for yourself but also for leadership, that also looking at obviously what are we doing, is it working, is it not? And yeah, talking about that, last week I posted a video that I thought would do well on Instagram and it didn't. I actually took it to heart, but then I realized, listen, you have to take it as a learning curve, and it was the first time doing it anyways, and so I was happy to see that, fair enough, okay, maybe we need to change something about it, and then we can post it again and then try it out a few more times, and if it doesn't, then that's fine, I'll leave it, I've done what I wanted to do. And so in the data side of things, is instead of fearing it, I think, you know, be best friends with it, because a lot of people are like, oh well, how do I grow, how do I know what I want my audience to like, how do I know what my audience wants? I was like, it's in the data. Like, the data is telling you what they like and what they don't like. And so be best friends with it. And, you know, I do weekly and monthly reporting for our team. And so doing that, I'm able to see what's working, what's not working in like short term, but also in the long term on a monthly basis, I reflect, okay, this is what worked, this is what doesn't work, this is what we're changing, and this is what we're moving forward. And, you know, on like a 6 month basis, we also see our strategy, but like, okay, well, what's changed and what do we have to like keep going and keep testing? So yeah, that's when I learned that I hated numbers and now I love them, because it's like, it literally tells me, okay, what I kind of need to do. And yeah, because a lot of people think it's like guessing or like there's some magic formula on how to like grow accounts and stuff. No, it's literally in the data.
Yeah, definitely. Do you do a lot with experimenting to see and be like intentionally saying, I'll do this version and this version and let's see what happens?
So I don't necessarily do like A/B testing, like, oh, we're going to do this version or that version. I think eventually I do that, but sometimes I'm just like, I'll tweak slightly and then I'll go again. Or sometimes we're just very, very like wild with it. Like, we'll just be like, yep, just post it on there. And so one of the things that we hear a lot on, for example, on TikTok is like, oh no, it can't be polished content, it has to be like authentic, it has to be like, you know, done on an iPhone. I was like, okay, well, we've just done an interview with an author and our head of editorial, and it was done nicely, shot like here we are today and stuff. I was like, well, I'm gonna test that on TikTok. And so that video currently has 50,000 like views and it gained us 400 followers.
Wow.
On TikTok. And that kind of told me that, number one, it's not necessarily like the way you do the content, but it's what the content is saying. And this was the author opening our Folio book for the first time and his reaction. And because he's a very well-known author, you know, all everyone that loves him followed us. It was like, wow, we loved it, like, and stuff like that. So that kind of made me realize, yeah, it's not necessarily like the kind of content that you do is what the content is about. So that was a very big learning curve lately.
That was a good tip, actually. I'm taking that one. Yeah. So yeah, really nice.
Yeah. So because we hear a lot of the time was, no, it has to be like raw, done on an iPhone. I was like, well, bet. All right, let's test this. Let's
see break the rules sometimes.
Break the rules a little bit.
Well, also, what's the worst that's going to happen?
Yeah, yeah, it doesn't work and that's fine, you know? And I think that's the beauty of it. Just, and I think that's another thing that I love about my role is that I can see something, but like, can be like to my manager, can we do this? 99% she'll be like, yeah. One time she said no because it was a little bit of a rogue idea, but I understand. But yeah, there's no harm in testing. And I think that's how you really grow.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. What would you say, so if you had the chance now, if we could jump in a time machine and we could go back and you're 17 years old sitting at this table, what would you want to say to yourself? What would be the advice that you're like, oh, I wish I'd known that then?
It's okay to not have it all planned. And I think because I was so like, okay, I thought that my career would be so linear. I think that once I had finished my GCSEs, I would then go to do A-levels, then I'll go to university, and I'll stay in that career for the rest of my life. And that is not true at all. I think we're so like accustomed to like, no, you need to have it all planned, 10-year plan, da-da-da, at the age of 18. And everything that I've gone through in the last 10 years have shown me, boy, your career can be a whole journey. And I think, yeah, just enjoy it and don't feel too much pressure. Even if, as long as you know, okay, if you want to go university, great. If you don't, that's fine. Like, take every step as it comes and really immerse into it and enjoy it. Because I think I was always, you know, focused on like, okay, what's next? Okay, I need to do this. I need to have this figured. And it's like, no, you just need to live in the present and really, really enjoy it. So I think that's one thing that I'll tell, I guess, my younger self would be like, it's okay. Like, just take each step as it comes.
Yeah, just embrace it. Take the opportunities, see what happens.
See what happens. And love then, that. And your career is not linear at all. I can be here today. Would I be in the same industry? I don't know. I mean, I love social. I really, really love social. But yeah, your career is never a linear line.
No, much more a climbing frame than a ladder.
Exactly, or a chessboard, like I say, because you can go up, down, left, right. You can do whatever you want, really, and you know, you are the owner of your own career.
Love that. I love that. Have you got any final questions, Ashley, or have we covered everything?
Yeah, I think she's answered all my questions.
Okay, I love that. I guess a final question for me, what next? Like, I suppose you don't fully know, but do you have a vision of a particular role that you'd like to get to in your career? Or
I think at the moment, not a particular role, but I love doing things outside of my work right now. So I'm doing a lot of speaking opportunities, I'm doing a lot of panels, I'm tapping into my toes of like workshops as well. I recently did a university workshop on content creation, so I think I'm really I guess, you know, taking a chance of myself as a professional, as a social media marketer as well, and literally sharing my learnings and my knowledge around the world and to new marketers as well that are looking to get into the industry as well. And that's what I do on LinkedIn as well. I talk a lot about my learnings, but also for people that want to join and be so and work in the social media in industry, that's what I'm doing right now. And I guess wherever life takes me, obviously I don't have a particular like industry or role that I'm looking for next. I think that's one of the advice I'm doing myself is that I'm living right now in the moment and I'm really enjoying doing these things right now.
Love it. And you're doing podcasts as well. And now we've got podcasts. You here, which is brilliant. And that is how we met, wasn't it? Through LinkedIn.
Exactly.
And saw that you were doing a lot more in the space. So it just all works, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Are there any tips for getting out there? Because it's quite scary getting on stages and doing panels and
Do you know what? I think the more you do it, the better it gets. I was very nervous coming in today. Like, I'm not even going to lie. And I've done like three, four speaking engagements already. And I think the more you do it, the better it gets. And, you know, one thing I used to try and tell myself is, oh, you know, you don't feel nervous, you don't do this. And like, the more I told myself, the more I'd actually feel that way. And it's like, no, embrace that you're nervous, embrace that, you know, it shows that you care and that you really want to do the best that you can. And so, yeah, like the more you do something, the more you feel comfortable in it. And that's why I'm putting myself out there. I'm going to speak in front of like 400 people in May. I'm just like, what the hell am I going to do with that? But I said, you know what, bet. I'm going to take a bet on myself and I'm going to do it. Yeah. And that's what life is about.
Oh, I love that. Oh, I'll share some tips with you afterwards on that. But yeah, no, it's brilliant. I knew, I wouldn't have known you were nervous today. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I was just telling myself, listen, it's fine. You are nervous. Go enjoy it. And even if you, because, you know, you want to, you don't want to make mistakes. And I think that's what the nervous comes from, is you wanting to be perfect. But like, no, you are human. And even if you make mistakes, that's fine. Like, you learn from your mistakes. And so that's a few little bits and bobs that I prepped myself before doing anything.
What a nice way to finish, and a nice bit of advice. Thank you so much.
Thank you so
much. It's been absolutely amazing. I feel like I've learned loads and also some good social tips in there. And thank you so much, Ashley. You've been a wonderful co-host, as always. And we look forward to seeing you on a future episode of Behind the Future.
Thank you.
That concludes another brilliant episode of Behind the Future. Thank you so much for listening. You can listen back to other episodes on YouTube or your podcast platform of choice. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, as that will help us to grow this podcast, ensuring we can get the best guests on here for you to learn from. You can also follow us on socials, linked in the show notes for exclusive content. See you on the next episode.